Chapter 9. Billy probably could have picked me up and carried me at a flat run if he needed to, but we had to cross only about 50 yards of alley and darkened street before an expensive SUV, its lights out, cut over to the curb and made a swift stop in front of us.
"Quick," I said, still panting, "to the Wolfmobile."
Billy helped me into the back seat, followed me in, and before the door was even shut, the SUV began accelerating smoothly and calmly from the scene. The interior smelled like new car-scented air freshener and fast food.
"What happened?" asked the driver.
She was a willowy young woman about Billy's age, somewhere around 6 feet tall. Her brown hair was pulled into a severe braid, and she wore jeans and a denim jacket.
"Hello, Harry."
"Evening, Georgia,"
I replied, slumping back against the headrest.
"Are you all right?"
"Nothing a nice long nap won't fix."
"He was attacked," Billy supplied, answering the first question. He tugged sweats and a t-shirt out of an open gym bag and hopped into them with practiced motions.
"The vampires again?" Georgia asked.
She turned on the headlights and joined other traffic. Reflected streetlights gleamed off the diamond engagement ring on her left hand.
"I thought the Reds were staying out of town."
"Not vampires," I said. My eyelids started increasing their mass, and I decided not to argue with them. "New friends."
"I think they must have been other wizards," Billy said quietly. "Big black cloaks and hoods. I couldn't see their faces."
"What set the police off?" she asked.
"Harry flipped a car over on top of one of them." I heard Georgia suck in her breath through her teeth.
"Yeah, and I'm the one who lost the fight," I muttered. "Barely even rattled his cage."
"My God," Georgia said. "Is everyone all right?"
"Yeah," I replied. "The bad guys got away. If the Alphas hadn't come along when they did, I'm not sure I would have."
"Everyone else scattered, and they'll meet us back at the apartment," Billy said.
"Who were those guys?"
"I can't tell you that," I said.
There was an empty second, and then Billy's voice turned cautious.
"Why? Is it some kind of secret, need-to-know wizard thing?"
"No. I just have no freaking clue who it was."
"Oh. What do they want?" Billy asked. "I only showed up at the end."
"I picked up a rare book at Box. Apparently they wanted it."
I could have sworn I heard his brow furrow.
"Is it valuable?"
"Something and it must be," I answered.
I fumbled at my pocket and drew out the book to make sure it was still there. The slender volume looked innocent enough, and at least it wouldn't take too long to read through.
"I appreciate the assist, but I can't stay."
"Sure, sure," Billy said. "What can we do to help?"
"Don't take me to your apartment, for one," I said. "Somewhere you don't go as much."
"Why not?" Billy asked.
"Please, man, just do it. And let me think for a minute," I said, and closed my eyes again. I tried to work out how best to keep the Alphas from getting involved in this business, but my weary, aching body betrayed me.
I dropped into a sudden darkness, too black and silent to allow for any dreams. When I jerked awake, my neck was aching from being bent forward, my chin on my chest. We weren't driving anymore, and I was alone in the SUV. The hollow weariness had abated significantly, and I didn't feel any trembling in my limbs. I couldn't have been out for very long, but even a little sleep can do wonders sometimes. I got out and found myself in a garage, big enough to house half a dozen cars, though the SUV and a shiny black Mercury were the only two vehicles in it. I recognized the place, George's parents' house, an upper-end place on the north side of town. The Alphas had brought me here once before, when they helped rescue me from the lair of a gang of psychotic lycanthropes. Susan had been with me. I shook my head, took up my staff and the little book, and walked toward the door to the house. I paused just before I opened it and heard voices speaking in quiet tones. I closed my eyes and focused on my sense of hearing, head tilted to one side, and the sound of the voices became clear and distinct enough for me to understand. It's a useful skill, listening, though I couldn't tell you exactly how to do it. There was the sound of a phone being returned to its cradle.
"They're all fine," Billy said.
"Good," Georgia replied. "Something's going on. Did you see his face?"
"He looked tired," Billy said.
"He looked more than just tired. He's afraid."
"Maybe,"
Billy said, after a second of hesitation. So what if he is?
So how bad must things be if he's afraid? Georgia asked.
And there's more, Billy exhaled.
His hand.
You saw it then?
Yeah, after he nodded off.
He's not supposed to have any movement in it, she said, her voice growing more worried. You've seen him on gaming nights. He can barely cup his fingers to hold chips.
I heard the wood of his staff creaking under them tonight. I thought he would crush it.
I blinked at that news and looked down at my gloved hand. I tried to wiggle my fingers. They sort of twitched.
He's been a little different since he got burned, Billy said.
It's been longer than that, Georgia said. It's been since the year before. Remember when he showed up to gaming with all those bandages under his sweater? He never would talk about what happened. It was a week after that murder at the docks and that big terrorist scare at the airport. It's been since then. He's been distant, more all the time.
You think he had something to do with that murder? Billy asked.
Of course not, Georgia said.
But I think he might have been working on a case and gotten involved with the victim in some way. You know how he is. He probably blames himself for her death.
I swallowed and tried not to think of a pretty, dark-haired woman bleeding to death while the hold of her boat slowly filled with water. She'd made enough bad choices to get herself into trouble, but I hadn't been able to protect her from the creature that had taken her life.